it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Hockey News on the A podcast. I'm Jacob Stoller from the Hockey News alongside Pat Williams from AHL.com. Set here to talk about a lot of topics around the AHL. We'll get into our prospect of the week, our team of the week, and some other fun stuff. But first, before we get started, Pat, how are we doing today?
Good. We're definitely in the swing of things with the hockey season now. About a quarter of the way, give or take, through the season. So now you are starting to see some themes and trends start to play out and get a little bit better sense now of exactly what we're dealing with this season.
And with bigger sample sizes comes, you know, teams getting a longer look at prospects. And with that, more of an idea of what they have and who to call up in the case of an emergency. And on Tuesday night, the Chicago Blackhawks had one of those situations where when Jonathan Toews, their captain, woke up with flu-like symptoms, they very quickly realized they needed a forward. And so in turn, Lucas Reichel, 2020 first-round pick, one of the top prospects, had to fly over from Rockford that morning. I read that he said he didn't even have lunch or anything. He had like a granola bar or whatever. Didn't seem to affect him too bad. Came out on the ice, played on a line with Jason Dickinson and Taylor Radish. Logged 14 minutes, including a minute and 15 on the power play, actually. Super quick call-up. And then Wednesday morning, he gets sent back down right away. Interesting kind of situation. And I should note that recently, like, I wouldn't say I'm surprised by Reichel being called up at all. He's by far been Rockford's best player. He's got 9 points in the last 5 games. And in that span, he's logged a 55% Corsi and expected goals for percentage. That stat is brought to you by Instat as well. I think where I'm surprised is seeing him get sent down the next day. I'm conflicted what I think about it, because in the preseason, Pat, he never got a chance with Patty Kane. He was playing predominantly with players like, you know, Kurashev, Kachuk, Sakura. Never got that chance. When he was brought up, sure, he got power play time, but he didn't get time with Kane, which I thought would have been a natural fit. And now he's back down in Rockford. So I'll turn it over to you, but it's just an interesting situation for it to be such a quick elevator move there.
Yeah. It's one of those calls where, you know, you picture behind the scenes just how hectic that is for everyone, you know, from him, the player himself, to all the people in the front office that have to actually make that happen in terms of the logistics and getting a player from Rockford to New Jersey and, you know, having them show up in some semblance of order ready to play. So it's a crazy day for everybody. I'll say this for sending him back down. I think the idea is just Rockford plays Wednesday night. It's another chance to play, right? And get back down there and play another game. And, I think at this stage of his career, you just want him on the ice as much as possible. And, you know, he's obviously got the motor. He can certainly handle that workload. And he goes back up afterwards, or he stays and they have a busy weekend. So either way, he's getting good competition, good minutes. So I don't see a downside either way.
The 20-year-old forward has recorded 23 points in 19 games this year. His 1.21 points per game is the first amongst all under 22 forwards that have played a minimum of 10 games. You know, I've said it before in the podcast, but for my money, in terms of raw skill, I think Reichel's zone entry, passing ability, skating ability with the puck is, you know, some of the best you could really ask for, really, in terms of raw, pure talent. But further to what you said, a lot of it is still but playing a lot, and he's still in a developmental stage. I will point out that on November 2nd, Ice Hogs head coach Anders Sorensen, he called out Reichel, like straight up, after a school game. He said that he took a couple steps back in terms of his compete level, which he, you know, was improving on. He was a -4 that game. And I think that definitely was an eye-opening quote, and I think it wasn't done blindly. It was done with merit and purpose. And Reichel's responded. Now, the question is there a benefit to having Reichel up with the big club when it's, let's call a spade, it's a lost season in Chicago? Are there benefits to that? If he continues playing this way, Pat, are there benefits to him going up there and trying to duke it out in the middle six?
I think anytime you can play the NHL, you're going to get something from the experience, right? I mean,
but from Chicago's lens.
Yeah. If nothing else, you come away from that experience knowing what you have to work on and knowing that there is still work to do. And he was an interesting case in training camp because, you know, I think Chicago could have justified keeping him on the NHL roster.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think certainly the skills there, but they made the decision that, you know, like you said, it's the rebuilding season and they want him down in Rockford playing heavy 20, 25 minute nights. They want him being the man in the lineup, not being part of, you know, maybe a top nine like he'd be with the Blackhawks. So I think, you know, it's a different management regime, obviously. So I think they are taking a more patient approach. It's an interesting decision, though, because a lot of times there is either kind of a explicit or implicit pressure to, especially right. with a high pick like that, who's played well to
very well
get him up to the NHL roster as much as possible. And, you know, for all intents and purposes to justify that pick. So, but I think they are maybe taking a longer term view and really trying to smooth out the remaining edges of his game that need work. And so that when he does go up, he stays up, right? You don't have him on that elevator back and forth.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth noting that obviously, as you said, benefits being the NHL, especially with where he is in his age. But if you look at someone like Brad Lambert, where, and this is a different case in different circumstances, but the sentiment stands. Brad Lambert was a guy that prodigy at 16, you know, he kept going up to the higher level, was playing pro in Finland at 16 to 17. And in turn, his game really, really struggled. He did not, you know, get opportunities to have a lot of puck touches. And even with the raw elite skill he has, he really, you know, tumbled and ended up falling to pick 30. And I think, while people may think that's a reach, what's that to do with this? I think the point really is there's nothing wrong with being the best at a lower level, like especially when you're 20 years old and being the guy, as you kind of said. So, you know, I understand Chicago's desire for that. And I mean, December, how many months away are we from them tearing this thing down, trading anything that can get them a pick or anything that walks, right? Like, I mean, it's going to get ugly there fairly soon, I would think.
Yeah, I think a good rule of thumb is, which level can a player play 20 minutes a night at? If it's the NHL, great. If it's the AHL, that's where he needs to be. If it's junior, whatever's going to get him the most possible ice time at the highest possible competition and trying to marry the two. I think if you can do that, that's generally a good development formula for a young player. I think the worst thing is when you see these high picks and they're in the NHL, but they're playing 6 minutes a night. They're in the lineup one night. They're, you know, sitting out the next night. So I think anything, 18, 19 years old, 20 years old, even confidence is fragile. So, the thing is with these high picks, this is the first time a lot of them have ever faced any sort of adversity or, hindrance in their career path, you know, and they have to get over it, that hump. And you want to set the player up for success as much as possible. So putting him into a situation before he's really completely ready, I think that makes NHL general managers a little squeamish at times. So I think this is probably the right course of action with him.
Let's move on to our prospect of the week, and that is Luke Evangelista of the Milwaukee Admirals, a.k.a. the Nashville Predators organization. 20-year-old right wing, he's got 17 points in 20 games. He signed for third of under 22 forwards in primary assists per game with 0.40. Second-round pick of the Predators in 2020. He's coming off a 111-point campaign in the OHL, finishing fourth in that league in scoring. To me, what I think is the most impressive about this player is he, you know, coming off a year where he scored 55 goals, known for the heavy shot he has, he started his pro career as more of a distributor. And that's something that I think is interesting, especially when you have an offensive strength, usually it shines. But in his situation, I'd like to know what you think about someone like him maybe struggling to get into the slot area of the ice. And maybe that's a product of him straying on the perimeter a bit too much.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, he's got decent size, right? But there's obviously a huge leap from junior to the AHL. Now you're playing defensemen that they've played in the NHL before. They're 25, 26 years old. They're filled out. They are what they are. You know, I think also too, there's a confidence level that just comes and just getting a little bit more self-assured and secure and willing to take those chances. But you know, he's part of a great forward core there in Milwaukee. You know, you have Igor Afanasyev, you have Marcus Nurmi, who came over from Europe in the offseason, Philip Tomasino, right on down the list. So it's a very typical Nashville setup with Milwaukee. I mean, that affiliation's been pumping out players for 20 years. I mean, everyone from, you know, Pecorine to Shea Weber to Philip Forsberg. I mean, if you look at the Nashville Predators, you know, the alumni list that came through Milwaukee is really kind of ridiculous. So they're very patient. I can tell you that with their development in Milwaukee, they don't rush anybody. So, and, you know, obviously that formula's worked pretty well for them for the better part of 20 years. So I think with Evangelista, just, you know, he's a quarter of the way into his season. I think he's still finding his way, but you know, through it all, he's obviously still putting up some numbers. And I think once he gets a little bit more, you know, that halfway point of the season, I think you'll start to see him use that shot. And there's obviously a lot to like about his game, and just looks like another typically good Nashville prospect.
I can't say I expected him to be this good so far. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I'm a little bit surprised. I think not that he was overshadowed or anything by Tomasino or anything like that, but as you said, very impressive crop of forwards in Milwaukee. And, you know, I think the numbers he's putting up for a first year, well, he's not a first year pro, right? He played with Chicago for four. Well, all right, let's figure this out. Is he considered a rookie, Pat? You would know this better than me. He played 14 games in 2020, 2021, the COVID year. Is he a rookie? Not opinion wise, like actually, is he a rookie?
Yeah, he's technically a rookie.
Okay.
By league rules. That 14 games isn't enough, and then also just because of the COVID season. So yes, he officially qualifies as a rookie. He'll be eligible for the all rookie team. He'll certainly be a good candidate for that. But yeah, he's definitely a rookie.
Okay. So now I know, but yeah, you know, I'm a little bit surprised how quickly he's come onto the scene. It's funny because Nashville and you allude to it a bit, but Nashville, not only do they have this constant, you know, pipeline of players, but they've done a pretty impressive job of the development, the churning out some of their guys. I know that Evangelista is a second round pick, still an earlier pick, but their track record after round one is probably one of the most impressive parts about them. And, you know, I think Evangelista is treading towards being that next story there.
Yeah. They don't tend to miss on those prospects, right? Like you don't hear the word bust with Milwaukee and Nashville very often, right? Like they draft well, but they also develop well. And the two have to work in, you know, concert together. You know, that's where, I mean, you know, sometimes I think teams get a knock on them for, well, that team doesn't draft well. Well, they may draft well, they may just not develop well, right? And Nashville's one of those teams that does both very well. And they have to, right? Like that's, you know, they're not a team that's going to throw tons of money around. They've been able to do that. Even pre-cap, they were doing that early 2000s. So they have a tried and true formula, David Poile and his staff there in the Nashville front office. And I think that's one of the best things I think you can say about a development program is two things. They don't have busts, generally speaking, those high first round picks that you know, fizzle, and they tend to get some of those, you know, mid-range picks up to the NHL as well. Right. So, you know, they have this thing down to a science at this point. And, you know, you're looking at like a Tanner Jannat, right? I mean, you know, undrafted player came in, kind of made his way through Milwaukee, really slow approach. And here he is now. He's a big contributor in the national lineup. And those are the kind of finds that, that really put an NHL team kind of into a different level in terms of what they're able to do. And you, if you can hit on some of those players, I mean, you're so much further ahead.
Let me ask you this then. Is he at a point, Evangelista, where if Nashville needs a forward, do they call him up? We just talked about Lucas Reichel, and I think there's different circumstances in terms of the quality of depth in each of these organizations, so forgive me, but and different players, but do you think that he is one of the players next in line to be recalled, or further seasoning might be needed? Because I know that people like myself can get caught up in you know, flashy point totals.
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on, you know, the particular situation, you know, what role do they need filled? But yeah, he would certainly be in the mix. Tommy Novak, kind of a good, well-rounded forward would be. If you want a little bit of an older player, Kiefer Sherwood, Fanasev would be in there. Tomasino would be in there. So they, you know, they kind of have a good, good range of, you know, different types of players. So if you need a guy that can come up on the fourth line, play 6-8 minutes tonight, great. If you want to have somebody that can, you know, maybe step into a top nine role, they have those options as well. It kind of really does depend on just, you know, what their given need would be in that situation.
Let's move on to some interesting news that has happened in the AHL, and that happened on Wednesday. And that is Logan Shaw, friend of the show, was on one of the episodes. And, you know, that automatically means you're a friend of the show. It's better than saying acquainted to the show. It's pretty cold. Logan Shaw has been named the captain of the Toronto Marlies in what is the least surprising news of all time. I mean, come on. You signed the guy to a 3-year deal and you're going to give him an A. Like that'd be pretty nuts. So no surprise there. Shaw is the prototypical, you know, beacon and pinnacle, whatever you want to say it, guy that you want to have in your AHL dressing room. He's played exceptionally well this year for the Marlies, 24 points in 21 games. But that's not why I think that he's someone that deserves to have that seat in his chest. You know, the Marlies take quite a lot of pride in the development. The Leafs, rather, with the Marlies. Rich Klune, you know, he had big shoes to fill before being the captain. And I think Logan Shaw makes a lot of sense for that. And it's very interesting sort of recognition for a guy that I think is playing a huge, huge role in one of the most lucrative and extensive player development programs that we have in this league.
Yeah. And you know, he's going to be there for a while. He signed a 3-year deal, which, I mean, we talked about this, which is absolutely unheard of.
Yeah. I don't even understand.
Signed a 3-year AHL contract. So, you know, he's going to be there. You know, he's really settled in there.
You'd think.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, he has, you know, like he, when he was on the show with us, he has his family there. So this is kind of where he's decided to make his home in hockey. And he has previous captaincy experience with Belleville. He certainly could have been the captain of the Moose when he was with Manitoba. So the obvious choice, right? I don't think there was any surprise. I mean, when I got word of that, I was like, yeah, of course he's the captain, right? Like he was already for all intents and purposes, kind of the de facto captain. You know, I mean, he's one of those, you can stitch a C now on his jersey, but he already was. I mean, so obvious choice, high character player, still obviously a great contributor, you know, in terms of, you know, performance wise. And like you said, the Leafs and the Marlies, kind of one of their most innovative development programs in all of hockey. And they invest so much into that operation. So it only stands to reason that you would, you know, certainly want to, you know, make, you know, a guy like Logan Shaw your captain. I mean, that's such it's a really important role at this level.
Oh, for sure.
Getting, I mean, you know, young players, you know, to, you know, over the hump, right? And you need kind of a, you know, you can have the wrong veterans, and that happens in this league. And if you're not careful, you can really kind of go astray. So, but you can also have the right veterans, and he's certainly one of them.
And you can also make a career out of being a right veteran. You know, Mike Keane, after 1,000 games or, you know, almost 1,200 games in the NHL, he had about 5 years as the captain of the Moose. And what you're seeing with Shaw in terms of the three-year deal, like the term may be sort of unheard of, but, you know, low to mid, or sorry, mid to almost above average six-figure salaries for veterans is nothing new. And as you said, you have to invest in those guys, and just for the sake of culture, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have the minor league team becoming the wild, wild west kind of, you know, cesspool of old timers and stuff. You need to have guys that are not only helpful players, but good people, and that can help these young guys as they make that transition to pro, because it's very difficult. And I'm not even talking about all on the ice. Like it's a very big jump, and that's why not everyone makes it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about it, just, you know, it's like anybody, right? Like you're coming out of that kind of that cocoon of junior or college, and you know whether you're a hockey player, you're, you know, an accountant or whatever you happen to be in life. Now you're stepping into your 20s, and there's all the responsibilities that come with real life, right? And players are trying to navigate that. And you think of players that come up from overseas, like, all right, you know, how do I get, you know, a driver's license? How do I get, you know, a bank account set up? All those little things that nobody really thinks about until you have to do it, right? And, you know, there's language barriers. There's all sorts of different sorts of challenges that kind of go under the radar. But you do have to have the right veterans, and you have to have somebody that's a little bit selfless, a little bit willing to put their own game, their own needs aside in order to help that 20, 21-year-old prospect, somebody who might be taking ice time away from them even. And it takes kind of a special mentality. But you are correct that, you know, if you're a veteran and you really kind of commit to that, you can make your very good living for yourself. You can certainly extend your career. Like you said, the money's, you know, great. I mean, this isn't the old, you know, days of, you know, small salaries. So you can, you can also set yourself up well post hockey, right? Like if you're maybe thinking about going into management or coaching, or you know, somebody like Rich Clune who went into player development, you know, it really does, I think, set yourself up long term post hockey.
I heard, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, so if I have, my apologies, but I've heard whispers of guys like Logan Shaw and other veterans that have bonuses in their contract that have to do with young guys is plus minus. So maybe they're not too mad with guys taking away their ice time. Maybe they just want to get a positive on the box score.
Yeah. You know, those players are worth their weight in gold. And, you know, it's a huge part of the development because this is a cap league. If you miss on those picks, that's what gets general managers fired. Right. So, you know, having that kind of that reinforcement, because coaches can only say so much, right? Sometimes it has to come from the players themselves, from the teammates, the big brother kind of role. So it can't always be coach yelling at players, right? You know, so I think a different message really does help get some of that learning done that young players need.
Absolutely. Should we get to our team of the week?
Sure.
We are going to do the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I actually, you know, I took in a couple games over the weekend, watched one of them in person against Belleville. And it's definitely an interesting. So I'll be honest, straight up, out of the can, I was surprised that Semyon Dur-Argachinsev was recalled. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on the Marlies. I've watched quite a bit of their games. I follow along with them quite closely. And yes, SDA has had a good year, but I was a bit surprised. I thought someone like Alex Steeves, we'll get to in a second, was a bit more refined in that area. But, you know, in turn, given that he did get the call up, it'd be hard not to mention him. You know, undersized guy, sort of an enigma in himself, where he was this, not polarizing or controversial, but unique draft pick, to say the least, given just the way that he is as a player, where he has this elite quirks and little skills, but you know, you kind of watch when you wonder, can this guy hit the next level? So the fact that he's almost a point per game player, good on him for doing that. And I'm sure, you know, the Leafs are happy given that they recalled him. He played his debut. You know, it's one game, but he wasn't great. I think the issues I have with him persist. He's, to me, like, Semyon Dur-Argachensev, who's known as SDA, and I'm sure you've seen this a lot, Pat, is like one of those guys where he's good in transition, okay? But just because someone, like, when I say good, I mean he's flashy. But just because someone can stick handle in the neutral zone and all those things, to me, it doesn't make me think they're going to be the NHL. You can't do that unless you're Patrick Kane or you have good hands. So, you know, it's tough for me to really understand because he's one of those guys where it's like you're either the top six or you're not. He, like, what is he going to bring to a third or fourth line? If a middle six construction, then maybe. But, yeah, I don't know how high I am on SDA, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's always a tough role for those kind of players because, like you said, they do need to be they're not a bottom line type player, right? So,
yeah.
If they can't necessarily cut it in that top six, top nine role, they kind of get lost, right? So, he's had an interesting development curve, right? Like, he's kind of one of those classic players that got caught up in the pandemic. COVID season, right? You know, he actually had to go back to the KHL. He, you know, played 4 years in the OHL, so he's kind of on that path and then had a detour back to the KHL. Got kind of a late audition with the Marlies, but kind of a, you know, chaotic season, you know, not just for him, but for everybody. So he really, you know, I think that, I mean, we've discussed that before. That's going to be an interesting issue for a lot of those players in that age group, seeing how much, if at all, that season kind of slowed some of their development. So last year was kind of his really first true pro season. I thought he did well. He handled it. And I do like the fact now he's taken that next step this season, right? Like, he's gone from being kind of a contributing player to now being one of the main weapons on the Marlies lineup. So, you know, I obviously jury's still out on him, but, you know, he's always going to have that size knock against him, but so far so good. He's just somebody I want to see, a little bit longer, see what he can do at the AHL level, before you really start thinking of it as a possibility with the Leafs.
As I said before, the guy I would have thought they would have recalled would be Alex Steeves. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Steeves' game, honestly. You know, part of it, I'm sure people will wonder, is the fact that he's got 20 points in 21 games. Last year, he had 46 and 58. Yep, he can score in college. He did the same thing with Notre Dame. But for me, I don't know. Like, he's a second-year pro. He's 22. He's young. He's got runway to get better. And I think his skating stride is the biggest thing there. And I know this from people that have watched him, that the Leafs really think that they can help him with the mechanics and certain things to make him a better skater, which is fine in terms of his future trajectory. But the player he is now, and what I saw in preseason, and I know that you gotta be aware of September sweethearts, as they say, right? You know, it's still preseason. But the player that I saw was someone very capable of playing a straightforward, low event kind of game. He has a good shot in the power play. Not that it would be put to use in Toronto. Like, don't get me wrong. But I think that with Steve, he's one of those guys where, and I think Joby Anderson falls into that same group. You could put him in a fourth line and he wouldn't really skip a beat.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question would be, because the way that SDA was used, he only played 7 minutes in his debut, mind you, but he was put it up on the third line. I guess they wanted someone that could log more minutes, and I think they liked SDA's upside more. But Steve's, I think, could play in a lot of teams' fourth line or whatnot. He's got to become a better penalty killer. Not that he's not a good one, but he's got to really, you know, hone that craft. He'll never be a top six player, at least in my opinion. He'll be, you know, I think his ceiling would be a really good third line player. And I think with Alex Steve's, that's what he could be. So I like a lot about his game, and I think, you know, even with that said, with him potentially becoming, you know, a third liner at the max, I still think this signing will go down as one of the best undrafted free agent signings the Leafs have had. Now, is it Trevor Moore? No. Is it going to be like the other ones they've had? Like Mason Marchment? For sure not. Tyler Bozak? No. But I think with Steve's, what the Leafs did is they found a guy that knew how to play responsible game at Notre Dame, had all the fundamentals down. And if it all goes well, he'll be a guy that they could fix his skating stride like a Marchment and got him to be the player that he looked poised to be. And that's a win, especially in a cap world when you spent zero assets to get him cap-wise or draft pick currency-wise. So, yeah, I'm bullish on Steves in terms of a role player. It'll be interesting to see, though, if that happens in Toronto, because that's kind of how it happens with these things. You could be on the cusp of it. You look at Mike Eiskanen with Winnipeg. He was really buried down the lineup in Ontario. One thing led to another, new opportunity, and hey, he's a top six piece in Winnipeg right now. So, you know, opportunity is a big part of it too, but I went kind of on a tangent there. But yeah, I'm high on Steves.
Yeah. The first word I always hear anybody describing is just maturity. You're kind of 22 going on 32 in terms of his, you know, his mentality and his outlook. And I think your point is well taken with skating wise. I think if there's one system that can get his skating up to par, it's the Leafs. They invest so much in terms of that player development and skating coaches. And, you know, I think it was a smart move by him to sign with the Leafs. It gave him the best opportunity, I think, to have an NHL future. And I agree with you. You plan him on a fourth line in the NHL. I think you wouldn't miss a beat. He's one of those players, very adaptable. He would fit in well. And, a big successful signing already. You know, and at the very least, you're going to have a good call-up option. And if there's more there, all the better.
I have to say, one guy I was very, very wrong about, and I think last year's when I wouldn't say I came like with a hammer, made a final decision, but one person I kind of wrote off was Mac Hollowell. And I will say, in seeing him play with the Leafs, he looked pretty good. And different player than Justin Hall, don't get me wrong, but for Hollowell, I see him as a guy where, and whether this is in Toronto or not, late bloomer that the Leafs took their time on, and that goes from the ECHL, where he played with the Growlers for quite a bit, to becoming sort of a fifth or sixth D with some upside. With Hall, it was penalty killing. It's his kind of skill. Hollowell, I mean, maybe. But I like him. I like his game. He plays with a bit of a bite. He can move the puck well. I think he's really, really invested in becoming a better defender. I think people look at the size, say he's 5'9", kind of say whatever. But I think if you look at the way that bottom pairing defensemen are evolving, and by that I mean like that they're not meat and potatoes, they're not these sort of, they're not Roman Polaks, as Toronto fans will know as a reference. I think Hollowell fits into that really well, where he can skate, he can move the puck well, but he plays with a bite. And now the true test will be, can he handle guys net front and top competition, board battles and those things? Don't get me wrong. But I think that he kind of has a blend of everything. He's an effective player. Can he move up into your top four? Now, no. One day, I don't know. I know it's a cliche answer, but I'll be honest. I was wrong about Hollowell. I think he does have the potential to be that sixth guy, seventh guy. I think he's come out this year shot out of the cannon. In the 11 games he's played this year, he's been really, really solid. Mm-hmm. He deserved this call-up, like, absolutely. And I think, you know, for the Leafs, it's another situation where, once again, they've kind of developed a call-up option. And, you know, yeah, Hollowell, that's a bad thing, but, like, I think that with prospects, people get really excited about them. And then when I come out here and say, oh, he's a good call-up option, it's like, you know, kind of like a sad, you put on a sound like wah, wah, like whatever, like that's kind of a letdown. But the reality is, so many of the ones that don't hit, so many of the draft picks that don't hit usually completely leave your organization. For the Leafs, have they drafted amazing? Probably not. But if you can get some of those fourth, fifth round picks that haven't necessarily quote unquote hit to be serviceable towards the end of their tenures, that's at least not a total loss, right? Like what are the stats of draft picks becoming players? It's very slim. So, I mean, even getting some games does help.
Yeah, not every pick has to be a home run, right? Like, no, you can having serviceable call-up options is great. And, you know, if you can convert a fourth-round pick, you know, who came in undersized defenseman with a lot of question marks, and you slowly brought him through the system. I mean, he was in the ECHL to start, and you brought him up, and now you've got him into a position where he's at least able to – step into the NHL lineup and and hold his own at the very least, even if he's not necessarily going to be a full-time top six or even top four D. Those guys are they're valuable, right? And they have some currency in terms of if you eventually want to move him somewhere, he could be another small piece in a deal. So you can't go wrong developing players like that. The more you do, and the Leafs have been pretty good at that, just the more flexibility you give yourself, the more options you have as a front office. And, obviously Mason Marchment's one of the biggest success stories. I mean, that was a player I didn't think had a shot at all, to even maybe stick in the AHL and to see where he is now. Full credit goes to himself and as well to the Leafs development system. And, he got away in a sense, but he certainly is indicative of that that mentality, that development philosophy that the Leafs have really put into place now for the better part of 7-8 years.
Two more guys I want to touch on is one of them is Nick Abruzzese. I don't know if I find that whenever guys come out of college, they get those couple games in NHL. It's easy, not easy, but it can happen where you look pretty good off the hop and you get kind of in love with certain players and whatnot. And maybe I liked what he brought with the Leafs last year, not maybe to stick, but I thought saw flashes with the Marlies this year. I think he's, I don't think he's having a hard adjustment to being on the Marlies or the AHL. He's not. But I think that to me, it's probably more and more clear. He's more of a fourth line player. And again, as we just said, nothing wrong with that, but I don't know. Part of me thought he could be a third line kind of player. And now I'm more trying towards him thinking he's going to be a fourth line player. I like his ability. I think he's a smart player. I think at best, he is what the Leafs wanted Alex Kerfoot to be. And I say my words carefully because I know that Kerfoot has really struggled this year. But I think the similarity between the two is smart, responsible, Harvard degree, not a big deal. And you know what you get from them, and there'll always be a place for that. I think that as Steve's, Abruzzese, and a lot of any four we mentioned, they've been leapfrogged by Pontus Hellberg, and that changes things, right? There's not many spots when one that was up is taken. I don't think he's gonna be sent down anytime soon. That hurts those guys' chances. And anyways, I think that Abruzzese is a fourth line guy, and just quickly here, I want to touch on, before we wrap things up, Joe Wall. Really interesting story. So, and I in the press conference after, he talked about it a bit. He has been battling injuries big time. He got banged up, innocent play. I believe it was a shoulder. I'm blanking right now. I knew this. I'm pretty sure it was a shoulder. And this is a guy. Joe Wall was a guy where he was one of the best goalies in college hockey. He signed his entry-level deal, joined the Leafs, hasn't really got that much runway. But in the games I've seen this year, he's been amazing for them. And I think that that's someone to keep an eye on in terms of the Leafs right now. It's going well, but they've got Samsonov and Murray and just a bit more than Jack Campbell. And it's a good deal cap-wise, but there's not really a guy for the future there. I would put Joe Wall over Schalgren any day. And I think that he's someone you want to keep an eye on, Leafs fans, because I think you have, at the very least, a potential backup. And, that's not fun either, but you never know. Backups, they then become starters. So Joe Wall is someone you want to keep an eye on. I know Pat, of all people, knows about goalies being able to climb the ladder, because funny story I'll end it off with here. I remember I had you on a podcast I used to host called Leafs on Deck, which I hosted with current colleague Mike Stevens. And no word of a lie, guys. I'll find the clip and I'll tweet it, actually, because this is legitimate. I asked Pat on the show, a goalie to look out for in 2019. He said Jordan Binnington, and then he went on to do what he did. So I gotta give you credit there, Pat. That was pretty nuts. Because I was like, oh, yeah, for sure. And then, I remember watching the playoffs being like, I've heard this name before. And then I saw one of your tweets. And I was like, oh, my God, that's actually a pretty good call. So, I mean, you probably didn't know he used to be as much of a nut job as he is, but good call there, Pat.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a wild presence in the AHL, which was kind of funny, you know, when I saw, you know, comes up the NHL and everyone kind of discovered like, hey, this guy's pretty fiery. But yeah, he was that way.
That was a nut job.
I think that's what makes him work, right? Like, he needs that fire. He's actually, you talk to him off the ice, he's a really calm guy. He's definitely intense. You can definitely sense that. But Binnington was, he was a really interesting development story. He was a guy that, you know, looked like his career was going nowhere. And then, boom, it took off. And, you know, 6 months later, he was winning the Stanley Cup.
Absolutely. And in terms of crazy goalies, I'll never forget the days of Mikael Burden. Even Garrett Sparks had his crazy days and never a dull moment in this league. But for this week's show, we're going to sign off. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Happy to get into all the topics of the league. It's turned into a lengthy show, and because a lot going on, honestly. But until next time, guys.